Got it. Here we go. Thanks, everybody, for writing. Boy, the letters, the text messages pouring in. We certainly do appreciate it, giving the teeny tiny lady a little bit extra work. Here she comes now, bringing the horses in. And look what you've done. Look what you did today with with Lady Treasure, Sean. What is that on top of Lady Treasure's head? What'd you do there?
Oh, yeah. Well, yesterday she enjoyed the bonnet so much that I decided to get her a beekeeping helmet.
She doesn't look very happy with the big over its nose like that.
It's a snout.
Yeah, it's a snout. You get that on Amazon. I just ordered one. It just arrived five seconds ago.
Yeah, she's trying to get into some different hobbies.
Look at that. That's good for her. Okay, let's listen and bring the microphone a little closer.
I'm worried about the kids.
What seems to be the problem?
A man with his pants down.
You do not even wear pants.
They can't go in the bathroom because there's a fire.
There must be some mistake.
I'm concerned.
Wow.
That's wow.
Well, pants are fire.
That's hold on. That is so unfair to that mom. She's on TV on Cairo 7, very concerned about her kid running cross country, and then we make her have to bring the teeny tiny lady in.
Yeah, she gets to. That's a high honor.
That's, you know what, Tom? I'm sorry. You're right. That's a good way of looking at it. Yes, look what she's got there. Okay, we want to keep. Oh, got to keep dark money out, right? This is always the big thing. You always hear from liberals. Oh, well, you look out with it. Say, you know, Citizens United. Oh, dark money influencing. Dark money. Well,
what are you talking about?
Dark money from rich people trying to buy elections, right? Because that's what we kept hearing when Amazon moved in and they wasted $1.5 million in the last couple of weeks before the elections in Seattle. There was, in 2019, Lorena Gonzalez, who's now running.
Wait a minute. You're skipping the top story, John. That's why
I was all excited about that story.
I noticed, because you're trying to avoid the story that makes Republicans look bad. Listen, we both our parties embarrass ourselves at times, and this one about the lawsuit.
This is that stupid lawsuit thing. They think that there was some sort of, people might have been messing around with the ballots. So Kim Wyman gets on G and Ursula.
Well, it appears to be our new normal. You really go back to the 2018 election where we saw a major candidate make allegations that they didn't lose in Georgia for the governor's race. And then you had, of course, President Trump making those same claims 2 years later. And I think that it has sparked this massive movement towards litigation. We've seen over 600 lawsuits filed in the 2020 cycle, and 125 of those were filed just between December and January nationwide. So, I mean, litigation is definitely moving into the strategic part of campaigning in the modern era.
Kim, as much as you and I are friends, I would go back to 2000 if you want to find something a little bit more when it really got started, right? Oh, you don't think so? When that case was decided by the Supreme Court, whether they're going to do another recount again, and then they did a recount, and they found out from the Miami Tribune that the numbers did stand as they were. But that's don't forget he was the something in chief thief, right? It's the commander in chief, and he stole the election. Bush stole the election.
That you're taking an anti-Republican story and trying to spin it.
No. I'm just historically putting some perspective into it, that it was in 2000. He was the commander in chief and really not truly the president of the United States because he stole the election. But anyway.
To have it decided by a partisan Supreme Court does raise some questions. But I want to point out, Gore conceded.
When?
After the decision.
Yes.
After the Supreme Court ruled, he said, yes, I understand, that's fine. And that's the difference between what he's doing and Trump. And now what the Republicans are doing, it's embarrassing. In Snohomish, Whatcom, and Clark counties now, they're doing these ridiculous, should be thrown out as nuisance cases, claiming that there's fraudulence, widespread fraud, and that all these machines don't work. And then this great article that we're linked to, they talked to all the state representative, Robert Sutherland from Granite Falls, Republican, organizing this event. They talked to all the people that signed on to it. They got 28 people to sign on. And then they're saying, well, I'm not personally alleging there's any specific impropriety. I'm not out there even alleging massive fraud and the need to overturn the election. I just want to see a more robust and transparent system. This thing has been tested over and over again. As Kim Wyman says, We have a trail. You could, all you have to do is request that trail. The fact that they don't request that, they want to make a political statement. This is, I understand it when you're in Arizona, when it's so, you know, the Republican Party is so strong there. I'm just amazed that there are enough knuckleheads to put their names to this suit to waste our time and energy in this case. It's just...
Hillary Clinton urges groups and prominent computer scientists and election lawyers to call for a recount in three swing states. She's asked to look for, they wanted to get into Michigan, Pennsylvania, and they'd also like to look at Wisconsin. Experts and others are encouraging Clinton's campaign to challenge the results in those three swing states. So this goes both ways, and here we are having it locally done.
John, it doesn't.
The Knucklehead Awards go to both parties.
It just continuously undermines and questions the validity of our election system. And I know that a swath of the a part of my party is convinced that the election nationally was stolen. They are calling into question our election here in Washington State, clearly with more litigation being just one more example of that. And it concerns me because people start losing faith in our election system. They start losing faith that the people who are elected in that system are legitimate, and it undermines the representative form of government that we have here in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Here,
that's
here, true. Kim. By the way, there was a recent national poll that came out. You know, 78% of Republicans don't think Biden won the election. That's up from 70%. This campaign is crazy.
I would put the same sort of thing that goes into questioning democracy when we have the president, you have Abrams out of Georgia saying that the laws in Texas and the laws in Georgia are voter suppression. So you have the same sort of nonsense that happens on the other side to question the results when it's not voter suppression. But it's really interesting when it comes to voter ID, where 70% or more of African Americans, when asked they're okay with voter ID, they say yes, absolutely. But then you have people like Joe Biden, the president, I think he thinks he's the president, referring to the fact that this is a form of Jim Crow, or what do you call it? Jim Eagle or something like that, some sort of nonsense.
I think we started to see it formulate in 2018, and I think both parties kind of learn from each other, and so certainly, you know, it's another tool in a campaign playbook of a way to, you know, call an election into question, don't concede, and then, you know, then we can just keep calling into question, and then that leader is undermined a little bit in their effectiveness. So, unfortunately, I think it is. But, you know, election officials are always going to focus on the things that we are charged with doing. We create an audit trail for every election. We create a chain of custody for every ballot that each county receives back from a voter. It's a transparent process. You know, election officials are always looking to the next election, to the next election cycle. Our counties are already starting to prepare for 2022 while they're running an election right now for November. So we have to focus our energies on doing the work.
Okay. Well, where's the suit right now at this point,
Stop
Tom?
The steal. Which, this Snohomish, welcome. They just filed them, they say, in recent days. So the last couple of days, they just filed these three claiming fraud and irregularities.
Okay.
It's just a waste of time, but still.
Yeah. It was like Hillary challenging Wisconsin and Pennsylvania. What's that? It backfired.
Yeah, but she didn't. That's the problem. She conceded the morning following the election.
Hmm. Right. But then she later on wanted to look into those things.
Yeah. But,
and I think when they went to ratify
the
vote.
Concerted effort.
When they went to ratify. Point. Right. And when they went to ratify with the Electoral College, it was challenged by Democrats in 2016.
Electors. Mm-hmm, and they were told they couldn't do that. Yeah.
Right. So again, you know, you're going to get it on either side. And right now the knuckleheads are the ones challenging
the
results.
Yeah.
Governor Inslee wins, right? He wins because he gets union support and the money comes in on a regular basis. No, seriously, Tom, I have friends of mine that work closely in the Republican Party. There is still one in Washington, and the inconsistencies of the money that comes in for the Republicans compared to the automatic checks that are deposited on a monthly basis into the Democrat side is hard for them to be able to compete against.
Well, ironically, though, throughout my lifetime, it's the Republicans that had the money and the Democrats that had the popular support. Now, that may have changed a bit, but I think the people, it's not because of the unions that control Washington State. I think Washington State tends to be more liberal, as we're finding out in ancient cities. There's business money and there's union money that balances off. You got the Democrats and the Republicans. And in this, on the West Coast, it tends to be the Democrats that are predominant. And in the Midwest and the South, it tends to be the red states tend to be Republican and business interest oriented. That's what
I think,
that is.
Gonzalez, who is running for mayor in 2019, came up with this idea of, hey, we can't have, if you are a corporation and you have a certain percentage of your holdings that are outside the United States, you're not allowed to contribute to local campaigns. This has not been challenged, but it did pass, I think, unanimously. And now Ms. Gonzalez is benefiting from the fact that unions outside the state of Washington are contributing heavily to her campaign, and a corporation like Amazon is unable, because of this, to contribute to campaigns through PACs, right, their political action committees. They can't give the $1.5 million that they wrote out, you know, was it 3 years ago or whatever it was, 2 years ago, Tom. Yeah. So in this case, people are now looking at it saying, well, this is interesting. The law that you passed is really benefiting you, Ms. Gonzalez, because the unions love her. By the way, side note, that's why she won't stop the $4 an hour extra to the people working in grocery stores that are apparently risking their lives. She's not going to give them a pay cut now. They'll keep kicking this down the road until she gets elected. But go ahead with the
I wonder.
Story.
That's a good prediction. But yeah, this is I think we need to credit the work of Joni Balter, is the one who came up with this. It's an opinion piece that's a fascinating analysis. She claims she doesn't have a dog in this hunt. I've met and known Joni Balter. She used to be on the Seattle Times board. I think she's married to a New York Times columnist and all. And she just says, oh, isn't this interesting? A year and a half ago, I think this needn't, as we used the word yesterday, needn't be necessarily nefarious. But it does break in Lorena Gonzalez's favor this time out, 18 months later. But there was concern when Amazon dropped so much money in a campaign to change the clientele, change the representatives on the city council, that there was a pushback after that election saying, wait a minute. That's too much money. That's so much money that you could really unfairly influence the election.
And did it?
And it had the opposite effect,
right?
Which was
apparently the amount of money. It doesn't. Right?
But it could. It raised the specter that it
could. Or it could not.
So, yes. And
flip
so,
the coin.
Yeah, and if it becomes the campaign sin. But anyway, so let's just finish. Let me just finish explaining. So they asked the city council, you know, let's say you can't have a multinational corporation, foreign, you know, interests, influencing a local election. Well, that doesn't seem unreasonable. You know, to say, yeah, I think that's good. Let's keep foreign money out. What Joni Balter points out is, interestingly enough, it doesn't mean that it has to be local money, because if it's a national organization, the problem with Amazon, it was clearly just directed at Amazon primarily, because Amazon's effort at influencing it. Instead, in this case, they said international or foreign investment or foreign company, because it's multinational, it was excluded. However, you can get a business from outside the state to give money, and can have unions.
Lots of union
and in
money.
This case, union money coming around the state. And Joni Balter just raises, it seems kind of hypocritical to say, hey, the big companies, you know, foreign investment can't come in, but you allow for national to come into a local election. And she points out that Bruce Harrell only gets about 5%, you know, from the national level, and she gets 2/3 of her money. Now, when you know, it's also a breakdown when they say, if you just tally the individual donations and vouchers, Gonzalez only had 11% and Harrell had 14% in that category. So that's much closer and not really a discrepancy. But I think that is an interesting and legitimate thing.
So the city council gets a chance to pick.
Yes.
Who gives money to local elections? So,
yes.
Like, Weyerhaeuser's out. I guess Starbucks would be out, right? Cable, like Comcast would be out. AT&T. Yeah.
Yes. If it's a multinational.
Why?
I don't know enough about those companies.
Somebody should challenge this.
Because
it was in court.
Yes.
Well, they don't care.
I don't think there's enough interest. Yes. That's
actually
what this article suggests.
Piece of the story is that it won't be challenged because in Seattle it's politically unpopular to do so. So someone who would have standing wouldn't do it because that might turn voters off. So it'll just stand, even though they would almost certainly win in the courts, because that's generally how the courts have decided.
Because of Citizens United. which says that business has a chance to spend money. They have a right to speech that a lot of liberals disagree with, but that's the law of the land. And that's
like a corporation like the New York Times.
Yes. Yeah. Or Boeing, for that matter, you know, or Starbucks, Amazon, any local corporation has the same right to speak, according to Citizens United, as we do as citizens.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, I mean, if you are corporations like Boeing and these politicians are making decisions whether or not they're going to let you keep your bank, right, the Boeing bank, the import-export bank, you want your people in there making rules going for you. So we'll find out how Gonzalez does. Where are they? Are they polling any of this sort of stuff?
Yes. Yeah, we talked, I think it was when you were gone, John. The poll came out as 42% for Harrell and 27% for Lorena Gonzalez. So Harrell has a healthy lead. Now, things could change. This was 6 weeks before the election. We're still a ways out. But right now, Harrell is sitting pretty compared to all the other races.
She's got to get some of that dark money to pour in here and help her. All right, Tracy Taylor, how are we doing on traffic? And how is the lines forming there for Styx and REO Speedway?
Babe, I'm leaving. I must be on my way. The time is drawing near. My train is going. I see it in your eyes.
Nice, thank you.
The love, the need, your tears.
Teeny Tiny.
Hello!
You want to dance?
Oh, they haven't sold out yet. They'll sell out soon.
Tune in
Thanks
now.
To Tom and Curly show.
A listener wrote in it. Can I hear Grand Illusions? All right. The idea of getting first, I think it was Shakespeare said, first kill all the lawyers. You kill him or fire him? What did he want to do?
Yeah, no. I think kill is the word.
You kill them all. People have always said this. You know what? Let's just get rid of managers. Who needs managers? And this idea of David Munson just wrote in, yes! He's so excited. You don't have to wait to hear the song on Cairo Radio, which is doing normally news. You could probably pull that up on your phone. But there you go, David. I'm glad you're happy. Okay, the idea of getting rid of managers, this has been something that's been kicking around for a while. It was 2011, but they said, you know, we should probably fire them, get rid of them. Middle managers are unnecessary when coming out of the recession. And now, after people have been working from home and they don't have somebody walking by going, yeah, I'm going to need you to work on Saturday from office space, people realize, hey, look at this. I can manage my time on my own. I don't need somebody looking over my shoulder telling me what to do.
Yeah, the setup of this fascinating article in The Atlantic, why do companies have so many managers? They point out that they think the United States seems to be addicted to the concept of management, that they've done studies, GE Plant, Swedish Bank, where they show that reducing the number of managers usually led to more productivity and profit. That right now, 17.6% of the U.S. workforce and 30% of the workforce's compensation. So not only is there a huge, you know, like one fifth of us are managers, they also make 30%. So they make more than their representative role in salary. So what is the problem? Why are we so addicted? And what's that? Shouldn't that change? And then he says, the great thing about the pandemic has forced us to change. Why is that? What do managers mostly do? Managers mostly try to make sure that we're doing our work, those of us who aren't managers, those of us who are slogging away in our jobs. And you can't do that remotely. With most of the population now working remotely, or a big chunk of it working remotely, you realize, what does that manager do? When I'm working remotely, he or she can't be on my tail. Say, what are you doing? Are you eating lunch? Are you going to the grocery store? They can't be sort of on you to make more rules because you rule the roost when you're in your own home. That they say this has shown that we don't need the managers that we do need. So then the question is, do we need managers at all? Can we get by without managers? Mm-hmm. And this article ends up saying, yes, there is a role for managers, but it's not about productivity. It's not about making sure that you do your work, that you put in as much work as you need. What they really need to do, and this is the new idea of managers, is they should be given credit for getting the most out of their employees by giving their employees the tools to do their best.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you judge somebody, not how hard they are. Like, wow, you know, Jerry's really a great manager because look at it, he really got on, you know, Tim's case, or he really got on Alice's case about that, saying, listen, you got to produce more or this or that. That really the whole point is not to criticize and fire. It's to promote the best of the best. Right now, the companies, they say it's a waste of like $3 trillion. That's how much we waste on managers that aren't good managers. Most managers get management positions through the Peter principle, which is, yeah. Oh, you're good at that job, then we'll promote you to the next job. And then if you're good at that job, you keep promoting you until you get to a job where you're not that great, and then you stay there. And that's why we have so many bad managers. We got to look at managers and judge them not on how well they are at the job before that, but how well they can literally manage people. And why is that? How is management used now? It's a way to be used as promotions. Mm-hmm. Hey, if you do a good job at this job, we'll promote you to this because you make more money. They say you should pay more money to the people that are good at the job that they're staying at, and not start paying falsified, you know, higher salaries to people that might not be that good at management.
The manager hires another manager, and then in order to because the complexity of the organization gets so that you just have to have all of these levels so it doesn't collapse under its own weight. I wanted to find out if any business that is doing business in the United States out there has no boss, employees negotiate peer-to-peer, and there are no titles and no promotions. And I thought, that doesn't exist. And then it does. It's called Morningstar. So if you ever put ketchup on your hamburger, Morningstar might have made that for you. They are also involved in pizza, and they have other things as well. They're in Sacramento, California. They are the largest tomato processing and handling. 25% to 30% of tomato processing is done through Morningstar. And the guy that set this whole thing up explained that he realizes that he'd like to empower the employees, not have these managers in there, allow these decisions to be made so much faster. He said one of the stories is kind of weird. Here's somebody who's buying and selling on, you know, purchase orders, spending millions and millions and millions of dollars. But if they want a new office chair because their chair has broken and it costs $500 to $300 for a chair, they have to send it up to some manager who then has to make some sort of decision that, oh, we're not buying office chairs for another year and a half. And can you hang? Mm. He said, you know, it's just so clumsy and so busted up that he feels this works better. You know, Boeing, of course, would need to have these layers and layers and layers because it is so complex. Certain organizations can work if they're sort of single focused and doing something. But I've always been amazed that when managers say, we don't want to set a precedent. To me, that was always the worst of the worst. You'd come in with an original idea. You're trying to do something new. Yeah, we don't want to set a precedent. Oh, God forbid you don't set a precedent where somebody's coming up with an idea that might actually make you more money. Right, because they don't want to reward you. Oh, yeah. I had that happen at King 5, and I just I got him at the end. But man, I mean, I didn't get the money, but I was able to screw him over pretty hard. You want to hear the thing in 1 minute?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Okay, I came up with an idea. I was going to run from Seattle to Spokane, right, which is about 430 miles. I said, I'll stop in all these towns, get the thing sponsored by, I don't know, Swedish or whatever, for healthcare, a man my age running and exercise, how important it is. I pitch the thing to like 6 or 7 salespeople. Somebody goes out and sells it for $250,000. That's not old money. That's new, brand new, never done before. So I thought, you know what? That's a pretty good idea. $250,000. I went into the manager there. I said, hey, listen, I came up with this idea. How about a little something, something? Can I get my beak wet? Huh? I said, you know, get a little something, something, little something comes back on me, right? That's pretty far, 420 miles, $250,000. I mean, you certainly want to encourage that type of outside of the box thinking. What do you think? Yeah, we don't do that. We pay you to come up with ideas. I said, yeah, I know, but not like that. I mean, come on, really? Really? No, we're not doing that. I said, okay. You know what? I held my hands up. I said, you know where this is? It's $250,000 right here. It's gone. And the sales manager called me like 5 minutes later. No. I'll give you the money. I said, nope, I don't want it from you. I want it from Dave. I want Dave to write me a check. And it can be as small as $1,000. I don't care. I just need to know that they recognize that this is way outside the norm and a little something come back to me. And they said, nope, we don't set it. No precedents, nothing. It's your job to do stuff like that.
And this is literally a line from this great article.
Yes, thank
you. This is a problem that could be solved by, and this is italicized, paying people more money for being better at their job. What you were doing was being better at your job,
yeah.
and they weren't recognizing it because it would set a precedent.
Right.
Imagine if everybody was better at their
job.
That's
what I said, Tom! That's what I said. Oh, God forbid you set a precedent where people are coming up with original ideas that are making you $250,000. And I did. I get it again. I held my hand out like I had $250,000. I went, gone, Dave. Gone. Because you don't want to set a precedent.
Oh, wow.
That's right.
Yep, and a decade later, The Atlantic writes all about you.
That's right. I'm so glad I didn't have to. I don't think I could have made it from Seattle to Spokane.
Yeah, maybe they did it because they knew you weren't up for it.
No, no. They didn't want to set a precedent. That guy had so many blackheads. I just felt like reaching across the desk.
Okay,
no.
We're still on the air?
Yeah.
Well, what? There's YouTube channels that people watch that, Tracy Taylor.
I know, but still, blech.
All right, blech.
Don't call people out traffic. By name, John.
Heard it from a friend who. Oh. Heard it from a friend who. Heard it from another, you've been messing around.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
They say you got a boyfriend. You're up late every week.
You see the hair these guys had? Tom?
Yep. Yeah, it marked the time, marked the era, that's for sure.
Yeah, a lot of work went into that.
Hello!
Teeny Tiny, she's right over there. Give me a little, transition, get the Mailman song. Just play as much as you want, joining the spirit of, like, Styx and R.E. Speedwagon.
Okay.
And here we go.
All right. That worked.
I had in mind, but that's good. Yeah. All right. We'll get to letter of the day first. Let's take care of all the rest. Here we go, Tom.
Okay. Our top story of the show today was about the Woodland Park homelessness issue, the clash between protesters and counter-protesters. Area code 360 says, wait. Running parties can't go in these parks because it's not safe, but they can have a homeless drug addict vagrant by an elementary school and don't care about school-aged children?
Question mark. 206. So I can get addicted to drugs, refuse a treatment, and get a free apartment with a view for free? Wow. So what is my motivation to change?
About taunting in the NFL, area code 206 says, it's about putting on a good show. Athletes are modern gladiators. Can you imagine if someone told gladiators they couldn't taunt?
Can you imagine? 206, I'm glad there wasn't a taunting rule when I played junior high football. Look at this guy living in the past. Man, there would have been so many flags. People would have thought we were at a laundromat.
Hey. In area code 206, come on, bro.
Yeah.
Taunting is a part of any sport. Can you imagine Muhammad Ali not being able to talk smack? Yeah, I know. Or I was thinking about Gary Payton.
Holy moly. First time ever I heard Tom say something that I agree with, and it had to do with football. The earth must have changed rotation.
Football brings lots of people together.
Yes.
Got to admit, it's pretty gangsta to knock a guy on his butt, then help him up just to do it again.
That's right. PLU as a football team, says 425. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. On the James Bond discussion, area code 206, Roger Moore was terrible. Come on, Tom. Roger Moore was the smoothest Bond ever.
206 says Honey West was the first TV female private detective in 1965. Huh. She needs a new franchise.
There you go. In area code 360, who cares if Bond is a woman? There's probably plenty of British spies that are women.
Mm-hmm. 425. Tom, shake it. Don't stir it. Roger Moore was funny. The 70s Bonds movie were more tongue-in-cheek.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Nick from Orcas, John is definitely more of a $6 million man than a James Bond. Oh, that's low, Nick.
Yes, that hurts. Lee Masters, a man barely alive. 206, the name Tegney, Tom Tegney. I really hope that they don't change James Bond. It would be as wrong as Aaron Rodgers hosting Jeopardy. There you go. It's for you, Jacob.
Mm-hmm. On the D.B. Cooper discussion, there was no D.B. Cooper, but there probably was an aircraft crew that had a great Thanksgiving.
I think so. How did he get to the airport? No abandoned car 50 years ago?
Hmm. Yeah, maybe he took a cab. Area code 206, if you were D.B. Cooper, would you trust the parachutes that they gave you? Yikes. I know. I was thinking the same thing.
You got five of them. All right. Teeny, she's right over there. Jacob, do you see her? Where she? Can you back tap
on the
glass?
Hello, it is time for the letter of the day.
There we go.
The letter of the day comes from area code 206.
Okay.
This just hit me. The Afternoon Bro Show with Tom and Curly. You're welcome.
Thank you, 206. That's letter of the day. Teeny Tiny, just working hard today, huh, Jacob?
That's all she wrote.
That's all
overworked.
She wrote.
Didn't write no more.
Didn't write no more.
She's doing it again. Here we go.
Let's do it right this time.